So this week's Parsha, first I want to say that I'm dedicating this teacher to my dad, my father, whose yahrzeit is actually tomorrow. So I decided I would dedicate this teaching to him. So this week's Parsha is Vayechi, and it's the last chapter in Genesis, which ends with both Jacob and Joseph's deaths, but begins with the word Vayechi, which means he lived. So Chabad says, by choosing this name, the Torah teaches us fundamental lessons about life and death. Life is eternal, continuous, and ongoing. There's no way it could pause for a moment. The Parsha continues with Jacob becoming aware of his imminent death and calling Joseph to his bedside to ask him to promise that Joseph will bury him, Jacob, in Egypt, in the burial place of his ancestors, in the cave of, in the field of Machpelah. Then, sometime later, Joseph was told his father was ill, and he brings in his sons, Menashe and Ephraim, so that Jacob can bless them. And Jacob blesses the youngest one, giving him the firstborn blessings, and the oldest one with his left hand, and the youngest one with his right hand. And then he blesses Jacob, saying, verses 15 to 16 in chapter 48, the God in whose ways my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd from my birth to this day, the messenger who has redeemed me from all harm, bless the lads. In them may my name be recalled, and the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and may they be teeming multitudes upon the earth. Though Joseph tried to correct Jacob so that the eldest son would receive the firstborn blessing, Jacob said, no, Ephraim will be the greater and his offspring will be plentiful, enough for nations, and Manasseh will also become great and become a people. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you shall Israel evoke blessing, saying, God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh, and then Joseph received his blessing. The God of your father's house who helps you, and Shaddai who blesses you, with blessings of heaven above and the blessings of the deep that couches below, the blessings of the breast and the womb, the blessings of your father, surpass the blessings of my ancestors. To the utmost bounds of the eternal hills, may they rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the elect of his brothers. It's quite a blessing. So Jacob died, and Joseph, overcome with emotion, threw himself on his father's face and wept, and he kept his promise and brought Jacob to the cave in Machpelah. And then when he returned to Egypt, his brothers feared that he would turn on them. So his brothers approached him, saying that they would be his slaves in payment for what they did. And Joseph here fully forgives them and says, have no fear. Am I a substitute for God? Besides, although you intended me harm, God intended it for good, so as to bring about the present result, the survival of many people. And so, fear not, I will sustain you and your dependents. Thus he assured them, speaking kindly to them. So Joseph and his father's household remained in Egypt, and he lived 110 years, and lived to see the children of the third generation of Ephraim, and the children of Machir, son of Manasseh, and likewise born upon Joseph's knees. So the story continues. And in verse 50, in verse 24, chapter 50, he says, I am about to die. God will surely take notice of you and bring you up from this land to the land promised on the oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, when God has taken notice of you, you shall carry my bones from here. And the parsha ends with Joseph's death. So both Jacob and Joseph don't want to die in Egypt. They don't want their remains left there. They want their remains brought to the land of their ancestors. So there are so many things in this parsha that you could sort of focus on. So I'm going to just bring up something that Jonathan Sacks wrote, and then I'm going to actually turn to impermanence, which is sort of contradictory to what the parsha is saying, because the parsha is saying we live on and everything is going to live on and things are not going to change, that these people will live on. But we'll continue. So Jonathan Sacks writes, Joseph was saying to his brothers, by your repentance, you have written a new chapter in the story of which you are a part. The harm you intended to me ultimately led to good. So long as you stayed, the people prepared to sell a brother into slavery. None of that good could be attributed to you. But now you have transformed yourself through tshuva, and so have transformed the story of your life as well. By your change of heart, you have earned the right to be included in a narrative whose ultimate outcome was benign. We cannot change the past, but we can change the story people tell about the past. But that only happens when we ourselves change. We can only change the world if we change ourselves. That is why the book of Genesis ends with the story of Joseph and his brothers. It tells on an individual level the story that the book of Exodus tells on a national level. Israel is charged with the task of transforming the moral vision of mankind, but it can only do so if individual Jews, of whom the forerunners were Jacob's children, are capable of changing themselves. What we become depends on our choices, and we are often free to choose this way or that, but what we become shapes the story of our life, and only in hindsight, looking back, do we see the past in context as part of the tale whose end we now know. If life is like a narrative, then the latter events change the significance of the earlier ones. Tshuva is the ultimate assertion of freedom. Time then becomes an arena of change in which the future redeems the past and a new concept is born, the idea we call hope. So I think that the work necessary for tshuva is so intense, recognizing what you did wrong, feeling genuine remorse, trying to undo any damage that's done, resolving not to repeat the transgression, and obtaining forgiveness from the person who was wrong. It changes us and transforms us. We are not the same as we were before. Tshuva is real transformation. And then Sacks goes on to say, atonement and forgiveness are the supreme expressions of human freedom, the freedom to act differently in the future than one did in the past, and the freedom not to be trapped in a cycle of vengeance and retaliation. Only those who can forgive can be free. Only a civilization based on forgiveness can construct a future that is not an endless repetition of the past. That surely is why Judaism is the only civilization whose golden age is in the future. So when I ponder about transformation, I envision impermanence, everything changing all the time. Every breath is a reminder of the nature of impermanence. Every inhale becomes an exhale. Every exhale gives birth to a new inhale. each breath contains both the fullness of the inhale and the emptiness of the exhale. They are not separate. They are two aspects of one complete breath, here one moment and gone the next. Our practice enables us to experience impermanence as we pay attention to our breath, as we witness what arises and then fades away, be it thoughts, feelings, or sensations. As we become more attentive to our inner life, we come into harmony with ourselves and with these arisings. With our mindfulness meditation practice, we become less reactive and have the freedom to choose more appropriate responses for any given situation so that our responses are helpful, bringing blessings into the world. Master Hsing Yung, a Chinese Buddhist monk, states that impermanence means change and movement. It applies to people, plants, trees, animals, and all things. It's not affected by power. It does not discriminate. Because of its universal nature, impermanence has been proven as the truth or principle of all sentient and non-sentient things. Robert Rabin of the Charter for Compassion writes, "Understanding and accepting impermanence brings us closer to reality and opens us up to a life of humility, a deep spiritual peace accompanied by empathy and compassion. As humility and peace deepen within us, we stop fighting life's changes and accept the inevitability of impermanence. We more easily accept the nature of existence. The recognition of impermanence allows us to be open to the poignant beauty of each moment and perhaps touch each task, each person, each living thing with love and appreciation. But it is this very poignancy that helps us to open to each other with love and compassion, because each moment may be the last moment." Our wonderful meditation teacher, Zoketsu Norman Fisher, says that change isn't just a fact of life we have to accept and work with. To feel the pain of impermanence and loss can be so profoundly beautiful, can be a profoundly beautiful reminder of what it means to exist. Impermanence is not only loss, it's also change, and change can be refreshing and renewing. In fact, change is always both good and bad, because change, even when it's refreshing, always entails loss. Nothing new appears unless something old ceases. Time is impermanence, and impermanence is time. Time is change, development, and loss. Present time is ungraspable. As soon as it occurs, it immediately falls into the past. Nothing appears unless it appears in time. And whatever appears in time appears and vanishes at once. Norman Fisher has this great way of explaining things very poetically in his prose. And he is a poet as well. Time is existence, impermanence, change, loss, growth, and development. The best and the worst news at once. The Buddha's final words express Buddha nature as, "Impermanence is inescapable. Everything vanishes. Therefore, there is nothing more important than continuing the path with diligence." Awareness of impermanence and appreciation of our human potential will give us a sense of urgency that we must use every precious moment. That's what the Dalai Lama said. And Pema Chodron also has a view on impermanence as a principle of harmony. She says, "When we don't struggle against it, we are in harmony with reality." Thich Nhat Hanh reminds us that it's not impermanence that makes us suffer. What makes us suffer is wanting things to be permanent when they're not. The insight of impermanence helps us to go beyond all concepts. Impermanence should be understood in the light of interbeing, because all things inter-are. They are constantly influencing each other. It is said a butterfly's wings flapping on one side of the planet can affect the weather on the other side. Things cannot stay the same because they are influenced by everything else, everything that is not itself. For instance, the whole cosmos has come together in order to help the flower manifest herself. The flower cannot be by herself alone. The flower has to interbe with the sunshine, the cloud, and everything in the cosmos. And Chöngyam Trungpa Rinpoche states, he's a teacher, a renowned teacher, states, connecting with impermanence can produce profound insight and a shift in perspective. It can put us in touch with the fragile, poignant quality of our own existence and that of our loved ones and friends. It helps us to develop sympathy, empathy, and compassion for them, ourselves, and all beings who are subject to the same terms of existence. So I'd like to end with a poem by Rabbi Yael Levy, and it's in reference to the Parsha. I'm going to sort of start a little bit into it, not at the very beginning. She says, the first book of the Torah ends with a choice to turn toward love and healing, with a bow to the infinite mystery that is always present. As we come to the end of this book of creation, beginning another turn of the year, let us remember that we are here together, beautiful and tender beings, doing our best to weave lives of goodness and blessing. And let us ask for help from those with whom we share this journey, ancient ones and all of you yet to be born, trees, earth, waters, sky, creatures of land and seas and the heavens above. Please share your wisdom with us. Help us to see the delicate harmony, the intricate weaving, the infinite interconnection of all life. Help bow into mystery and rise together for healing and love. Let's take a moment of silence.